This is HPR episode 2086 entitled HPR Community News for July 2016 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 69 minutes long. The summary is Dave and Ken miss the regular recording slot but still get in the show.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Okay, that's the coffee in. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another slightly delayed edition of Hacker Public Radio Community News. Joining me this evening is Dave.
Hi, everybody.
Okay, and for those of you new to HPR, this is a community podcast network where the people who listen to the shows are the people who contribute the shows. That includes us two guinea pigs for the moment. And this show is open to anybody at all to contribute to and to join. We normally have it at the, what's the very complicated algorithm, Dave?
It's the Saturday before the first Monday of the month.
Yes, and if you think that's easy to tell computers, then yes, please do a show about how you can do that, how you can put that into your calendar.
Yes.
So where are we? Yes, so this show is basically an idea where we go through the episodes and the new hosts that have joined in the previous month, so that, and anything else that's hit the mailing list, if you haven't subscribed to that, which you should, or anything else that has been posted on the RSS feed, if you haven't been subscribed to that, which you should. So do you want to introduce the new host, Dave?
Well, yes, that's going to take a very short space of time because there are none this particular month.
Yes, here we are in the shark fin times, Dave. You know what I mean by that? We get a lot of shows and then we get no shows. We get a lot of new hosts, then we get no new hosts. Well, it's the summertime in the Northern Hemisphere at least, and this is fairly typical of this time of year. But, again, lots of shows come in and shows trickle out. One thing that never stops is the out trickling of shows. The in deluge of shows comes from time to time, but what I would like to see is regular shows coming in all the time from people. And if you have, you know, if you want to burst up a small series or a whole bunch of shows, that's fine. You can just space them out over the coming weeks, every 2 weeks or so. But more information is available on the Give Shows section of the website. So, shall we go through the shows for this month, starting at 2065, which was a What's in My Bag show by Tony Hughes. And he's carrying a Lenovo 201, a Lenovo 200 tablet, a Lenovo 61S, some Raspberry Pi stuff, portable SSD, and a sign-off.
It's good to carry those.
You got to carry your sign off. The internet, it's in this box. The whole internet? Anyway, yeah. Good show there from Tony, who I think he got donated these Lenovos, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, he seems to have got some older machines from various sources, which sounds quite desirable. Yeah, and
nice.
I'm impressed that he has bags for every occasion as well, he mentioned.
Yeah, he does a lot of stuff with the Raspberry Pi, run the Raspberry Pi's jams and stuff like that as well. He's a good member of the community.
Blackpool area. Yeah, I think Blackpool and Manchester and stuff seem to be very strong on Raspberry Pi jams and that type of thing.
Cool stuff. Well done, Tony. No comments for that show. If ever you want to give some feedback to shows, please do so. Either email the host directly or leave a comment. If you go to the shows link on the website, you can leave a comment to those shows right there. So the next day was the community news. There were two comments on that, Dave. Epicanus was telling us, this is a thing of beauty. I haven't listened to the episode, but I must say the inclusion of HTML in the feed makes community news entries much easier to read. They used to show up as a smashed together mass of text in the feed reader. Spiffy work. Well, thank you very much. You replied, Dave?
I didn't actually. No, I just replied to the fact that during the show, we talked about the series stuff, and I got confused between the series page that I'd improved and the tag and summary list. The one is dynamic. The series page is dynamic, and the tag and summaries is regenerated with a PerlScript every time there's a change. So, but it's probably nobody noticed, and it was just me. But I thought I'd just like to be on the record as. having made a mistake.
No, that's nothing. I thought at the time it was a bit strange what you were saying, but actually you make a good point that coming on the record and correcting stuff is something that everybody should do. I always think it's a bit strange when we criticize politicians for what we admire in scientists. But sir, you changed your mind. Yes, well, new facts came to light and I changed my mind.
Yes. Why would you not?
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. The following day was John Duart with a Haste, the Pastebin alternative. Never, ever heard of this. And took it from John Culp's show notes on Blather intro. And I completely missed it back then. Or maybe I didn't. But it seems easy enough to install. And you got yourself a quick server where people can post all sorts of dangerous stuff. Randomly.
Yeah. I had come across it. I followed it up when I'd heard John talking about it some while back. But and it looks really nice. I don't currently have a use for it. Being on an ADSL link, my upload speed is incredibly low, so I suspect it wouldn't do me any good to try and run that at home. But it's worth thinking about if you want to do that type of thing.
It's like actually quite nice, I think, for if you're an internal team and you just want somewhere to put this sort of stuff that you don't want to be putting it on Pastebin, because quite often you just want to dump some text when you're on a conference call or something like that. So I might actually install this on work on one of our servers. Pretty cool. One of these things where, you know, you're going to spend 2 hours sometime in the future going, I know I heard a show about that. Where was it?
yes. This is why we need tags on our shows to be able to search them.
That's exactly
was
it.
Was that the right? Did I say the right thing?
There you go. Yes, and if you want to help out with that, then you can go to the contribute section of the HPR website and find out how to contribute tags. The next day was podcasts I listened to and how I fetched them, which was interesting, actually. I always like these shows, and I think we should have a OPML feed of these recommendations under this series. I wouldn't mind keeping that as well in the series, the series summary. Dave, if you could make a note to remind me, in the series summary, to have a link there whenever people get to this, that we maintain a list of all these podcasts. That would be pretty cool to do, I think. Don't want to step on Dan's the linuxlink.net, but some of our recommendations have extended beyond that, I must say.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, you're quite right. It would be lovely to have a sort of generic file of all of these sorts of things.
Yeah,
cool idea. Yeah.
Alrighty, and lots of them. The Duffercast, which is well due for a new episode any of these times. Lots of these I've heard before. Some of them I've never heard before either, which is always great. And there was an by the way, there's a new podcast out called You Random, done by the Book Club, and I'm shocked that the Book Club haven't announced that podcast on this feed. And I was just listening to those during the week, actually. And in the third episode, they commented that I was a nice guy and all the rest of it. But Dave, I think you can attest to the fact that I am a gobshite. So don't anybody be falling under the delusion that I'm a nice guy. I am far from it. Thank you very much. Okay.
I'm not saying anything.
No. It's because I've got the goods in you, mate. So the comments, there were three comments here. One was by Cyber Guru, would it be?
Cyber Guru, I read that as.
Yeah. Cyber Guru. GPodder was slow in my case because it was indexing all the files in its folder to maintain an internal database. You can set options in GPodder to delete after an X number of days. You can manually clean up files in the application. That said, I never delete the underlying files because it's the causes the GPodder database to become desynchronized, which causes its own set of problems. One thing I regret actually is deleting all the podcasts that I've downloaded through the years.
Ooh, yeah. Why particularly?
Because people say, once it's on the internet, it never disappears. And that's not true. Once it's on the internet, the metadata never disappears. But the reference to the files themselves, the files often disappear and are gone and are nowhere to be found. So, we make an effort to put them on archive.org, and hopefully that will continue as a very worthy project. If you want to help out, you can always throw them a few shekels. But quite often I've been looking for files, and the site's gone off the air and turned into a porn site, and the files themselves are nowhere to be found.
I have seen this. You're right. It's a big job, though, I would have thought.
At the time, yes, it was a massive amount of data, but I'm thinking now, a 4-terabyte disk drive is it's a lot of money, but you could have all the open source podcasts ever created there. But anyway, archiving, cool thing.
Yes.
Next comment.
Comment two is from Frank, and he says, as a Slackware user, I sort of kind of knew of the Church of the Subgenius, praise Bob, but that's a meaning I don't get, I'm afraid, but I had not stumbled over their podcast. All I can say is how very strange. As an aside, I use Podget to get my pods. I used to use Podracer until it didn't like me anymore. None of that fancy GUI stuff for me.
Yeah, with podcatchers, I'm very tempted to. I do so much stuff with XML. I'm very tempted just to use, XML Starlet and pull it down with that. But the problem is, then you have to build all the other stuff where people are doing it wrong, because the RSS spec is such a terrible, terrible specification.
That
everybody has implemented it because it's so loose. Everybody's implemented it their own way.
There seem to be a bunch of services that you can sign up to, and some of them have done the podcast thing very, very, very strangely indeed.
Yeah.
They caused me an enormous amount of grief.
So what essentially is a two-line bash script turns into like a 200, like Mashpodder basically. Pages upon pages of workarounds and stuff. Anyway, the next comment was by Folky. Thank you for the show. I too use Podget. Talked about it in ep 1992. My Podget saves nearly all files in folders named with the date, and he puts in the date setting there. That way you can listen chronologically and easily delete all you listen to without needing to know it for every file. You don't have to use a cleanup function in Podget either. Did you set the most recent equal XX in Podget RC to set it to 30 and it works? On the questions of syncing between devices, he recommends using rsync, and he's wrote a script which is up on GitHub called bpackpod for inspiration. So have a look at that, why don't you?
Yeah, that's quite good. It's amazing how many people have sort of done their own stuff around this sort of area, and it's a fascinating thing to go and look at done.
It's one of these things. How difficult could it be? Questions.
Been there.
Explaining to a lady, there was a catastrophic. Well, not catastrophic. There was a lot of coming home on the train one day the other day, and they're doing maintenance on one of the lines into Amsterdam, and the other line out, one of the other lines out, a train broke down. So then, you know, people were, they didn't know where they were. She was going, oh, but they should know where all the trains are. I said, yeah, they do know where the trains are. And that sign is calculating how long it's going to take the train to get there to here under normal conditions. Yeah, but if this was an airplane, I go, okay, this, no, stop. It's the traveling salesman's problem. It's extremely difficult to solve this issue.
Much more difficult than you imagine it's going to be, too, isn't it?
Yeah, because she was saying, you know, if this happened in Schiphol, all the planes would be falling out of the sky. And I go, no, because the plane doesn't have to travel on that specific piece of air. Yes, which plane has got the most fuel in it or the least fuel in it? Well, let's land those first. And basically divert the other ones to other airports. And failing that, you know, pick the ones that have got the most people in them and try and land those first. You know, it's cruel, but cruel, but fair.
Oh, yes. I wouldn't want to be in that line of work.
No, but, not necessarily either, but the computer algorithm, if you take all emotion away from it, is fairly simple. It's a lot simpler than you've got a network with trains on it that you can't physically... it's even more difficult than internet routing protocols because you've got physical trains that need to move. You can't just dump the packets. Anyway, enough about that, sorry. JK, John Culp, did county stuff in LibreOffice Calc. And it's amazing how many people are, I don't know, is it a time in your life when you start getting fascinated by LibreOffice Calc? But John Culp and on you Random Pokey was also going on about how he just finally saw the light of spreadsheets. It was pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah. It's John's manifesting manageritis.
Oh, dear. It'll be PowerPoint next if we're not careful.
Absolutely, yes. He'll be doing Gantt charts before you know it.
But this is actually quite useful stuff. Sum of products and counting if, which I had never known about that.
I did know about count if.
Yeah,
but I didn't know the other one. So, you know, I just found count if because I needed it. And then, you know, you don't look any further. But these are the count ifs is also rather cool. And the sum product is great. Yeah.
And BeEasy also had a very good thing about sum if, which is similar. Instead of counting, you sum the values in the given range. So I know whatever you say about anything, you know, I quite often will produce a, you know, big problem. We solved it. There it is. And here's a text file explaining what's gone wrong, and unless you put it into an Excel spreadsheet with a graph and put it on some sort of visual dashboard, it's okay for engineers, it's not okay for mortals. Sometimes this stuff helps. Okay,
yeah, absolutely. So one comment from BeEasy that you just alluded to, who says, thanks for the quick tips. I already know about COUNTIF. There's also a function called SUMIF, which is similar. Instead of counting, it will sum up the values of a given range if criteria is met. Sorry. Pedantic. Criteria are met, because it's a plural, in another range. So he gives an example of how a spreadsheet might look and how you would apply a sum if to it. Sum product was new for me. I've already started to use it. Keep up the informative shows.
Cool. So the next day was Adventures with Jonathan Solcombe. Join me in an audio and visual... Okay, fix the pronunciation before we go on.
I was going to say it's Slocombe.
Slocombe, fine. Join me with an audio adventure for Captain Slocombe and another Robert W. Service ballad, which is Happy Birthday, David. Third time doing a show.
Yeah, what a great idea. Yes, I always liked David's idea of doing this.
And absolutely, why not? Why not? We only need 290 other people to decide to do that, and we solved our problem, Dave.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's kind of cool. All the stuff, all the links are on there to the various different pages and even a YouTube movie. Frank commented on this. It was nice to hear the Project Gutenberg and LibriVox get some publicity. They are two of the most worthwhile projects on the interwebs. I wholeheartedly agree with him. About that, Project Gutenberg being putting stuff into the public domain, and LibriVox taking that stuff and converting it to audiobooks. So Project Gutenberg, any books that are out of copyright and should go into should go up there, or authors can choose to put it up there straight away. Do you know what I would like to do, Dave? I was just woke up the other night, the way you do, with a revelation. I would like that if you are not able to purchase or avail of a piece of copyrighted work within a year and a day, it should be made public. It should go automatically into the public domain. I think that would.
Okay.
So, for example, a show comes on. You for books and stuff, so you want to you know, with the Disney films, not that my kids were ever into the Disney films, they release them, so you can't get Snow White now, and then in 5 years time you Snow White will come out and it'll be €24 for a thingy, and then the following year it's something else and something else. But it's supposed to be you're giving these people a copyright so that they have the right to make copies, but equally the public should be able to avail of those and purchase them, you would think.
You would indeed, yes. Yes.
I would like to hear people's comments on that, views on that particular statement.
How
it would work. It's like they, there's a a law in Ireland that, you know, for public paths, that if you get a right of way if the public are allowed to travel, you know, if the people are taking a shortcut through your front garden or something. And if after a year and one day of walking through your front garden, then it becomes automatically a public right away.
Yes. I've come across this. I'm not sure what the situation is in Scotland, but it's somewhat similar. England is much more restrictive in my understanding, or was at least. I'm not sure now. Yeah.
But so, year and a day thing similar has precedent. Yeah. Okay, following day. The Bofang, the Bofong, I should know this. UV-5 or radio, which, let me 100% clear, I do not possess one of these because that would be illegal. And it's in the QSK Ham Radio episode. And this was our good friend Mr. X coming back again with a some other hidden features that he had found on his radio. And I would love him to do a whole episode on taking each of those words and functions and describing what it is, why you would need to use that, because I was screaming at the radio going, oh, this, you know, as he was going through, this is this, and then it has this feature. Why do you need this feature? And do that even for the basic on-off stuff, basically turning on a radio, tuning into something. I love those, especially as I'm getting into ham radio myself.
Yes, I listened and thought, oh, that sounds interesting, but I was sort of filtering it out as a non-ham and thinking, well, that's really for those guys. But it would have been nice, to have had a little bit more introduction for the naive like me.
Yeah, and also the naive like me who has been I've read a lot of ham radio books in the last few years, because ever since I've announced I want to become a ham radio enthusiast, you know, it is not enough for me to just learn the exam. I want to understand it. Hence, it's taking a lot longer than I thought, because I keep getting distracted. But anyway, yes, we love ham radio people. So people, come on, get ham radio. We need all our Elmers. Just do the basic stuff as well. The following day, episode 2072, the awesome time I deleted my home directory. Sigflup deletes her home directory only to recover one important file. Who among us have not been there? Which of us has not experienced this? No!
Yes. I, as a rookie admin of a multi-user Unix system, I have not quite done that, but I have done really, really bad things, like change the permission on the temp directory, which causes everybody to blow up because everybody uses temp. Uh-huh. And I'm saying, why is this machine doing this weird thing? And the finger points at me. Oops, sorry, I didn't realize.
Yep.
Yes.
We've all been there. Also, a very good tip for how to recover it, actually.
Absolutely, yes. It's fascinating.
And Tlatu has a lot of has some episodes, I think, on HPR related to basically getting rid of the RM command and replacing it with a generic, put it into a temp directory, which kind of makes sense. So
yeah,
very good. But those of us who have not been there should not stand on the sidelines and laugh. We have this thing in work when something like that happens, you know, you're required to buy tart for every team that's been affected and you're not allowed to have a slice.
That seems quite just. Yes.
Yes. It's oh yeah, unfortunately a lot of tart has been purchased over the time due to that, but also I've had to buy a lot of tart over time as a result of that one. But it's quite good. Everyone makes mistakes, climb a mountain or jump in a lake. Comment by Frank: I hope I never have to do this, but I'm glad to know it's possible. Yep.
And Brian follows with I've had my best results with test disk, but I'm definitely going to play with this. That's interesting. I've not heard of that. I think my son and I did a forensics thing on a broken laptop of his using PhotoRec,
which
is a more generic, you know, look for anything that might be a file type of thing. And then you have to pick the bones out of that, which is not easy. But this is much more targeted and sophisticated.
I read there's quite a few for recovering SD cards, which can actually be a lot easier because they, on the SD card itself, completely lies to the operating system and actually doesn't delete it because it doesn't want to wear stuff out. So your files will happily be there and you can bypass all of that and even go down to the SD card and recover some files from there. And I remember somebody writing a script that will look for typical headers in files. So we'll look for the start of a JPEG photo header or a Word document or whatever, and then scans through the files. And it might not know where the file ends, but it knows where it starts. So you'll have, there might be a JPEG file and a data file. So you'll have the JPEG file, and then at the bottom, there'll be a whole gobbledygook. But yeah, it's pretty cool approach. Can't remember what that was.
No, it's quite cool stuff. I once wrote a thing to recover broken magnetic tapes back in that dates it,
wow,
doesn't it? But you already knew that. But I mean, tapes all full of tape marks and you know, start of headers and stuff like that. So if you just wound forward till you hit something that looked like something, then you could start determining if it was a file or what the hell it was. So and that used to happen a lot because tapes would snap in tape devices.
I've got a lot of DV tapes here that are completely, I need to go through them again and try and recover them somewhere. You know, photo, video cameras, DAISY.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
So the following day we had GNU Readline Part 1, and never one to disappoint, Dave, you introduced me to a few new ones that I didn't know about. Did you know that you can do Control Home and Control End and Control, you know, they move one word back as Control Right Arrow? Did you know that?
I did. Well, I will be knowing it because probably Part 2 or 3 will cover this. Because I think I said I didn't want to throw too many of these you in one time because, you know, if you're listening to it, you might be able to pick the odd one out. And but if I can hit you with 50 of them, you'll probably turn off way before.
I didn't know about the control underscore either.
No, neither did I until I started doing this. No,
control L is really quite handy. It's like the boss key, Control L.
Yes.
If you're doing all your command line console stuff, you know, Control L. Oh, the screen just happened to clear right there. Moving on. Anyway, Power of GNU Readline. Experience with a neighborhood cat. The show about a cat. Warning, repeat, warning, contains content that will be disturbing to some. I like these shows. Well, I don't know, obviously the story was. But I liked Brian's approach, actually, I did.
To which
I replied, this show is definitely of interest to hackers. Don't be afraid to share more.
No, it was a rough ride, I thought, but still a worthwhile one to follow him on. And it was it was quite an affecting tale.
I think we're all a bit scared of death. I mean, I'm terrified of it because, hey, you know, what is it? You know, they were all right. You're going to go to hell forever. Damn it! What was that? The Life of Brian, or not? Monty Python film where they go to Valhalla and the monk Yes, yes, I'm opening the doors. Do you remember that one?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I think not the Holy Grail. Could it have been the Holy Grail or something? Where all the Vikings were there, and they're all experiencing the terrors of death. But there's one Christian monk among them, and he's going, "Yes, yes, you know, there's really doors here, and I'm really opening the doors." He's opening the doors of Valhalla. Sorry. Sorry, guys. I will try and find a link to that and put it into the show notes, which I hate doing because now it means even more work. Anyway, Frank said, do you want to read that one?
Oh, sorry. Yes, I was just writing down Monty Python to remind me to remind you.
Well, I can read the Frank one then. Okay. Yeah, Frank says, a tale of kindness, gentleness, and truth, especially the truth that we must accept death as being part of life as birth. This caused me to remember an experience we once had, though the end was happier. My wife and I were going to visit my parents for Thanksgiving, which is at the end of the November in the States. Thanks for that. The youngest sister was watching the house. Sister allowed the cat to escape. Understand the cat was declawed and most decidedly not an outside cat. Cat did not come back. Later on in the spring across the street, the neighbor called me over and there was Mittens curled up next to his chimney and narrow a shadow of her former self. When I brought her back inside, my wife shrieked and ran away. The poor thing looked so bad. The happy ending was that she, the cat, fully recovered and lived long enough to tame the Labrador we got several years later. So nice, good story.
Yeah, I'm sure many people have stories like that. It's fascinating to hear them.
Yeah. Just thinking, I grew up on a farm and you have a responsibility to animals. But they're not pets, they're animals. But at the same time, there is the husbandry element of animal husbandry. And I remember when times were rough on the farm, you know, and my mother would spend the profit for the year going to the vet to have a calf or a cow taken care of, and I never really understood that from a profit and loss point of view, but now being more mature, I think I understand that from a human point of view.
Yes. There is an ethical requirement to do these things, I think, on us.
But there's also a certain point where you go, okay, this is it. And I also think myself, here we have euthanasia is legal in the Netherlands. It has to be done, approved by 3 independent doctors. And my mother-in-law passed that way. She had terminal cancer and was, you know, looking at 2 years of extended, you know, life-extending stuff. And then she had that happen, and it was in her own house, and all her kids were around her and stuff. And it was a nice way to go. To be honest,
yes, it is. I can quite sympathize with that,
and I understand a lot of people will be screaming at the microphone for now at me for approving of this. And you're perfectly entitled to your own opinion. And I do apologize if that in any way brings up sad experiences for you or whatever. But in that case, it was a choice that they had, and they made it, and they're comfortable with their choice. Okay, yeah,
good.
On more cheerful things, episode 2075, skin cancer. Our recent experience with skin cancer and a primer on UV. Clinton Roy, who is not a doctor, just so that we know, went gave some very, very good advice. This is definitely 100% of interest to hackers, and went through how he the Australian BOM. What is this skin cancer? There was a imaging technique that he was describing where you take photos of your body and you compare growths over time. And he found one of these, and his GP was able to take care of it in a few days. So very good stuff, and absolutely of interest to hackers. We need to group these somehow.
Yeah. Tags.
Tags.
But it's a sort of a medical tag or something of that sort.
Yeah, life, basically.
Yeah. No, it's very cool. I've been to Australia, and the one of the guys I stayed with had just come back from having a melanoma removed because of that very, you know, it was just early stages and they can be operated on. My mother had one as well because she used to love to sit out in the sun all day long and used to say, should you not be wearing a hat? Or, you know, but she didn't. And then she got melanoma. It was removed and nothing came of it. So it's all a matter of catching them early.
Getting it in time. That's the thing. And go straight down. My wife had one and she just went down, had a look at it and it turned out to be nothing. So fine. So great, yes, and always, yeah, better safe than sorry, I say. But then again, I don't have to pay for visits to the doctor. So, well, I do health insurance, but I can just go down as often as I like.
Mm-hmm.
The following day, magazines that I read: Linux Voice, Linux Format, Micromart, Raspberry Pi, the Magpie, Full Circle Magazine, and PC Linux OS Mag. This is another show by Tony Hughes, and I read two of those.
Yeah, me too. Oh, actually, three. Yeah. I occasionally read Full Circle. You can be on an RSS feed and get it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, great idea for a show. Excellent. I really like this. Yeah, yeah.
Let's turn that into a series.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Magpie is something I've not been reading, and listening to Tony talking about it, I really should, because it sounds to be very full of good stuff.
What I've done is I print them off in work on the color printer, double sided, so four sheets, and then staple them together and just leave them in the at the sort of coffee area on our floor, and people come up and they read it, and the amount of people who have asked me for, oh yeah, did you put the Magpie or the thingy there, and I just give them a Raspberry Pi then to try stuff out, and it's one of the most read magazines on the floor. So that's a pretty cool thing.
Very cool. I like the sound of that. Yeah Oh, and a plug for Linux Voice. I was having a little drink with certain podcasters on Friday, including one of the Linux Voice editory team.
Oh, which is, cool.
Andrew Gregory.
Yep.
He's a cool guy and is prepared to come to Glasgow to meet us all.
I could not afford that, Dave. I really could not.
No, it's a shame you couldn't. We would have liked to have seen you there, but it's a long haul.
I'm thinking for 3 days of Og camp, I can justify that. But and also I was never really into pub crawls. I'm more a go to the corner and have a chat and start singing sort of guy myself.
I'm a lightweight, and I bowed out after pub number two.
Oh,
about 3 hours, I think it was. But
that's not too bad.
It was good, and we had a really good evening. I haven't heard what happened to everybody after I left, but sure, the story will come out in due course. As an HBR show, I believe.
Very good. Yes, that's why I'm not going to ask you any more questions about it. LibreNil.net, self-hosting for friends and family. I talk a little about my network and how I can host services for your friends and family. Excellent idea. I'm very happy that he does that. And if he wants... if you want to, this is Christopher M. Hobbs, of course. And Christopher, I'm happy to donate a server, a Raspberry Pi, to this that I put here on my network if you want to. However, I do not do any of this stuff because as soon as you go on holidays, the first thing that happens is your network falls over, which is why I outsource my networking to some ex-colleague who is far better at it than me.
Yes. No, I thought it was a great, great show and a very interesting thing to be doing. There's a lot of information in that show too. I made the note to go back and listen to it again. I haven't done so yet, just to get a full picture of what Christopher was talking about there.
Yeah,
very cool.
The openwireless.org. I have that here on my Wi-Fi. I just have openwireless.org available. And which is a cool thing. Go have a look at that as well if you haven't had a chance. And then all of these services will be interesting to have a show about, Christopher, how you set those up and what you do. The most interesting one, I think, would be the DNS, because in this day and age of monitoring and all sorts of interesting you know, monitoring and metadata, would be interesting to be able to make sure that that is coming out in different places and that you're able to manage your own DNS services. But there you go. Very cool. Mail servers. Yeah. Again, mail is one of the most federated things. Urandom.info or urandom-podcast.org, is it? They also did quite a thing about federation. They could also do with an email address on their feed, by the way. So the next day, 2078. Dave, can you put in the show notes to put a link to that Urandom podcast from Pokey and X110 and Taj? What's in my bag? Short summary of the crap. Windigo lugs back and forth. Stainless steel coffee mug. Stainless steel thermos. Canteen. 1 foot micro USB, 1.5 foot micro USB cable, Ethernet cable, Sony headphones, SD USB 64 gig primary on a keychain, Magnite, ballpoint pen, lunch, mason jar, metal box, backup drive, Dell Mini 9 with AC adapter, and a Zerizen Verix laptop with an AC adapter. First point I'd like to say is you don't get dehydrated from drinking coffee. Theoretically, you do, but it is so minuscule. Any effects that you get from being dehydrated with coffee are made up from the liquid water that's in the coffee that you're drinking. So you would need to drink thousands upon thousands of cups of coffee without water in order to get... Actually, I'm not sure about that last statement, but I know that you can't get dehydrated from drinking coffee. So... But you should drink water as well. Have you gone, Dave?
Sorry. I was just writing things. I like this show. And Windigo was sort of slightly apologetic that he was doing this off the cuff. Well, more. Do more like that, please, because you did a brilliant job, I think.
Absolutely.
A natural speaker, really nicely put together. So I
like the idea of having the 64 gigabyte drives. Yes, we do live in the future, having all these devices there. It's absolutely, absolutely awesome. I have a little USB thing that I put in a SD card in right here. It's tiny. But it's amazing, actually, 64 gigs. Just going around on your keychain. It's awesome.
It's just unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable.
We live in the future.
Yes.
Yeah, go on.
No. I was just about to reminisce, and that's what old people do, so I should shut up.
No, do. This is HBR. This is what actually, you're right. Shut up and do a show about it. Thank you very much.
It's coming. I'm going to do another one of my life history in computing thingies at some point fairly soon.
Yes.
So yeah.
Now that you said it, you owe me a show. I'm like Beetlejuice. You say it three times and you owe me a show.
And up pops Ken, wagging his finger at you.
Go on. Mini 9. Ha! Our old Mini 9 is still kicking, huh? Good to hear it's still being put to good use. To which Windigo said, in the voice of Dave...
My favorite. Not only still kicking, but it's been my primary machine for the past 3 years while traveling. In fact, I'm typing on it right now because it was in my bag. How meta.
Pretty cool. Everybody loves Acid House, apparently, according to Sigflup, who demonstrates how to get Acid House quickly. She uses Technobox 2 and simulates a TB303. Is there an TR803. Is there anything this woman can't do? She's a brilliant programmer. She's an artist of her pictures that she sent to me are amazing, and now she's into techno music. Seriously. On the other hand, she has her own issues as well. So yeah, but this is a good episode.
This is fascinating. I love to hear how music is put together. I can't say I actually understand what Acid House is, but it's probably just a case of Googling the answer.
Get off my lawn.
My son is...
It's Glenn Miller or nothing.
No, having lived with my son who had nothing like this, but lots of music production things on his Mac MacBook, you know. So Dad, listen to this, you know. So, yeah, it's very nice, but you know, I prefer a bit of Bach myself. But no, I actually enjoy all manner of types of music, but yeah. This is not a genre that I have sort of singled out particularly, but you know, it's always the first time.
For some reason, the Netherlands is big into electronic music, and I think the reason was, and again, you random come up with this link, where Philips in Eindhoven did a lot to promote electronic music. So that could be why electronic music is very, very big in the Netherlands.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. My son being very much into music, we decided on doing a holiday many years ago, and I said, where do you want to go? And he said, Berlin. Why Berlin? Well, that's the home of trance and dance and all that stuff. And we got there, and it was the last example of the Love Parade techno music thingy on in Berlin on that very day.
Oh, very
we
cool.
Sort of, yeah. We didn't pile into it because they were too young to go in and sort of be lost in the vast crowd. But we went home and watched it on the telly. I went to the hotel and watched it on the telly. So they were broadcasting it simultaneously on the television. So yeah, I think we all had a great day just sitting in the hotel watching that.
Now, the next day was Kadian Live, Effects and Transitions, the massive, massive amount of work by Geddes to convert these to audio. And I love the fact that Kadian Live, this series of articles is absolutely excellent, because it just allows me to go into Kadian Live and go, okay, I know this can do this, and I refer back to this series and find out how to do stuff. And Geddes is doing a really good job on translating these to audio for us, which
absolutely
is
a very, very professional finish he's producing there. It's really good.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of from professional to ultimate hacking, fixing my daughter's laptop. My daughter broke the headphone jack in her laptop, and I tried to get the remains out. This is... Oh, Dave. Did you have something underneath the laptop in case it fell out of the workman? Oh, you did. You had
a
chair.
It says so. I stood it on a chair, which just happened to be the right height to hold it up. Oh, yeah. God, yes. If it had fallen down and smashed while she was out, I'd have been killed. I'd have murdered.
And the question is, why didn't you just take it apart and, you know, unscrew the thing and just get to the socket?
Well, you can't, because it's a closed unit. I mean, you can get right down to the motherboard. That's not a trivial exercise. The motherboard's about the last bit you get to after you've been all the way through the keyboard and everything else. So I looked through the disassembly manual to work out if it was possible. And then when you get there, it's a completely closed thing. You'd have to desolder it and put a new one in, because you can't poke the bit of plug out from the back.
Yeah,
it's not like jack plugs used to be in the
back
old
in
days.
The old days.
You could just look inside. I had a reel-to-reel tape recorder with weird plugs on, and I did do that. Open the inside. Well, I was fascinated with what was inside it, you know. But not this one. No way.
Yeah, I'm getting more and more envious of the tools and stuff you have in your house.
Oh, right, yeah.
Just having a look. Although your washing needs to be changed, Dave.
Oh, that's the tumble dryer. Yeah. It still needs a bit of... it hadn't been emptied yet. Yeah. You don't see the rest of the crap in the house. I cropped off the revelation of Dave's house of crap. But you notice I've got a vice. Oh yeah, there's a vice bolted to the kitchen table, and that's there all the time. You know, so
seriously?
There you go. Yeah, it is. I never remember to take it off again. It's just a clamp-on vice, but it's just useful to have.
Oh, it is,
in the way.
Yeah. So, I have one right here. Look. But that's under my workbench. Well, yeah, so you laugh. What, you don't have a vice in your kitchen?
Everybody should have one.
Yeah. Spot the bachelor, eh? Okay, next, we had a comment by 0xf10e. Nice work with a smiley face. Yes, it is. And there is an amazing amount of joy to be had by, you know, doing a hack like that and it actually works. But it could have gone wrong. Yeah. It could have gone badly wrong, Dave.
I know. I started off thinking, well, should I take some pictures of it? I might manage to make a show out of this. But what if it goes wrong? All right, well, nothing ever happened.
Well, so. I'm more thinking about, did you take a backup?
Of the laptop?
Uh-huh.
No.
Who needs a backup of a laptop, you know, when you're working with a drill that could generate heat, that could start a fire within the laptop? Yeah.
No. I'm a craftsman. I'll have you know.
Yes.
You can see
that it's the vice attached to the kitchen table that gives it away, Dave. Okay, next day. Basic audio production by Nacho Jordi. And Audacity Odor and talks about was it compression in the zone?
This was equalization.
Equalization, yeah.
Yeah.
I just listened to it yesterday. And he's saying that he might not be able to continue this series, but that's absolutely fine. Allow somebody else. Audio production is a good series to have. So if anyone else wants to jump into the fray, feel free to do so. And two things there, actually. One on that is any of the series that are marked public, not specifically private, then you can contribute to them. And when in doubt, just ask the primary host who started the series. Or ask us. And the second one, Dave, to your comment about if it fails, do not be afraid to put on shows that failed. For example, MY Bill's oscilloscope kit that didn't finish was one of the most entertaining episodes. And from my point of view, when you do get it working, I'll have another show. So all the better. And fail multiple times.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I would agree with that, actually.
Because I think people are too hung up on everything being absolutely perfect, but I'm also quite interested in how things fail. Is you know, you try something and it doesn't work out, well then you just save somebody that amount of time.
So yeah, it's a learning experience indeed.
Yeah, exactly. Just me, 18th HBR beer podcast in the beverages show, and this time it was Imperial IPA, Flying Dog Single Hop Warrior Imperial IPA. If you're going to name it, you should really name it. I don't like IPAs per se, so there you go.
I'm a fan. I'd quite like to try something like that. But
I thought we had this rule that you were going to have to send us a bottle just so that we could confirm. I distinctly remember not being sent one, so not happy about this. Although that might be a bad idea. Cleaning the throttle body on my pickup truck, and I'm so glad John got this this vehicle, because we're getting so many shows on it as the thing breaks in multiple ways. I laugh, but I have owned vehicles where driving down the road and the front wheel falls off, and you have to replace the whole housing and stuff. So there. Yeah. I don't think he got this one fixed in the episode, but Pokey replied in email as an email thread. Do you have that right there in front of you, Dave?
Hold on a second. It was entitled John Culp's Truck. Are you talking about?
Yeah.
This is Pokey says, or Patrick Daly, as he puts himself in the email, says, John, if your rough idle symptoms persist, it may be a stuck EGR valve, the idle air control IAC valve, or a coolant temperature sensor, CTS. Wow. So shall I read all of this?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, okay. Cleaning or replacing the EGR may do the trick. There may be a way to test the IAC and the CTS with the scan tool. Often the parts stores have those to lend out. I'm not sure if the Bluetooth OBD2 testers, somebody did a show about that recently, can perform diagnostic tests, but it's worth a shot if you have one. If it's none of those things, then it may be a vacuum leak or worn out plug wires. A vacuum leak can be found by listening for a hiss, then spraying the area with your throttle body cleaner. If the idle smooths out while you're spraying, then you found a leak. Just don't spray too much at once. It's highly flammable and and engines are hot. Sarah from the exhaust with it. Yeah, so it could be quite amusing. Vacuum leaks can come from cracked or disconnected vacuum hoses. Don't mess with the mass airflow sensor, except as a last resort. They are very sensitive and often fragile devices. So because it happens after driving for a while, I'd start with the EGR valve and the coolant temperature sensor. Some cars have EGRs that just get dirty and stick open, and cleaning them fixes the problem. Other cars have EGRs with weak solenoids and need to be replaced. A little research will probably tell you which is more likely for you. The throttle body cleaning was a good start, and you probably did a good enough job to eliminate it. The butterfly and side passages are the most important. If those got cleaned, then you're done there. Dirty plenum walls are relatively unimportant. You may wish to pull the IAT and clean it and its passages. Wow, complex, eh? You could also look to see if there's an adjustment procedure for your throttle position sensor. Bad plug wires can be diagnosed by misting them with water from a spritzer bottle in a darkened garage or in the evening. If you see little blue sparks, then it's time to change the wires. Be sure to do them one at a time so you don't mix them up. If you change wires, do plugs, cap, and rotor if you have them too. The last thing I can think of is dirty fuel injectors and not atomizing fuel properly. Sadly, I don't know of a cheap DIY remedy for that, or diagnosis for that matter. Black smoke, even very faint from the tailpipe as the car dies, would hint at injectors, the IAC, or a faulty coolant temperature sensor. Best of luck. Let us know how it turns out. Wow, that's a manual in itself, that is. That's amazing.
That is a show, and did we know that Patrick Daly was an expert in automotive vehicles? No. Each of those paragraphs is a show right there, wouldn't you think, Dave?
Absolutely.
What's an EGR valve? What's its use? What's an idle air control valve? What's its use?
Yes, I have to say that in listening to John's show, I was thinking, what on earth is a throttle body? I have done engine maintenance, but in the days of carburetors.
Yeah,
I know nothing of fuel injections. And so I was reading up about it and the whole business of cleaning and stuff. And there's so much, as Pokey was alluding to this, so much, so many sensors, so many controls. It's a hell of a thing. But if you can master it, then good for you. Tell us about it.
Exactly. John replied to Patrick, thanks so much for the detailed feedback. I'm going to save this for future reference. Great to get this analysis from somebody with your level of experience. I'm glad to report that the truck has been doing just fine since its throttle body cleaning, so I'm considering it solved for the moment. Yes, excellent. And the final show for this month was PenguinCon 2016 report. A nice, chilled out, relaxed walkthrough of what PenguinCon is and Ahuka's experience of it. Very nice.
Yes. I like these from Ahuka. Sounds like a hell of a conference. Some tremendously interesting stuff.
It's funny how all the different conferences have different feels to them. And that's kind of
strange that the conference with stuff about insect electrophysiology is that's not a thing I would have expected at all.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Yeah, don't worry about it. He'll grow back a leg. But he might be bloody sore right now.
I don't feel pain. No,
they don't feel pain.
Guaranteed. No, fish don't.
They've never told us.
We don't want to feel pain, pained.
Yeah, amazing that, isn't it? Yes, some other comments. Mr. X, and I'm presuming, seeing as this is posted on the 7th, the 3rd of this month, we didn't cover it in last month's show, I'm guessing.
I think so. We said we were going to try and rationalize this a bit for this episode, but I have
duct tape, that's what we're doing here. The chips are definitely down. This is the first one where Mr. X did a show, and Mike Ray had asked, does it talk out of the box? And yes, it talks out of the box. Playing with the radio, I noticed that not all functions are spoken. The band function button, for example, which changes from VHF to UHF function, only beeps, but you can go to any frequency directly at any time when in the VFO mode, which I which is spoken, and you can type the frequency directly. The VFO-AB is the same, but again, the same applies. Would imagine it would make an excellent radio for the blind op. It wouldn't go too far wrong with the price. What is VFO mode? What's VHF, UHF? What's VFO-AB? All shows, Mr. X.
Mr. X follows up in comment three, saying, just read your comment above again and realized I hadn't properly answered your question. Yes, most if not all of the menus are spoken. When you push the menu button, it announces menu and then shows you on the display which option is selected. You can find out which option is being displayed by pushing the menu button a second time. You would then push exit. To change to another menu option, you could either use the up down keys or use keypad entry, which unfortunately only beeps within the menu option. However, again, you can find out what option you are in by pushing menu a second time. Hope this isn't too confusing, and I still think a blind operator could use it fine, particularly if you upload a pile of frequencies to it using the open source Chirp software.
Also another show there, thank you. The only other comment that we haven't spoken about already was test driving de Vuan. Oh, I got this wrong last month as well, by Frank Bell. And that is the Debian version without systemd. And Crayon says, Slim. For your information, Slim, Simple Login Manager, should allow you to cycle through the available DMs, which is display managers, by pressing the F1 key. You simply stop at the desired DM and then log in. Slim config within ETC somewhere, for example, ETC Slim or /slim.conf probably, can be used to define your choices. Never heard about that one. Thanks, Crayon.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. And I think we've covered all the other comments on today's show due to so I think we can use our brains rather than having to rewrite that. Was there anything else on the mailing list, David?
Well, we've had a problem with the mailing list for the notes, which I emailed you about, but just to explain to anybody listening, I make these notes by parsing stuff off the Gmain website, and the site's down at the moment. It was when I checked it an hour or so back. So we'll have to fill them in later. But yes, there is an amount of stuff on the that was talked about on the list.
Okay.
And
I'm just
you've got it.
I'm just going to call it up here now in a sec. Let me see. So I mentioned about that the guys had an Earth-friendly computing device and crowd supply, an EOMA68. And the reason I put this on the list was because I did an interview with him at FOSDEM, and I completely lost the interview. It was so, so annoying because it's a very, very interesting project. Very technical guy, but he has... it's hard to get an idea of what he's trying to do. So I don't know if you know this, the old pop-in PCI MCIA cards from days of yore. Remember
yes,
those?
Indeed,
so
yes.
You can get a laptop and you could extend it with one of those that you put an additional network card or a modem or something. And you know they were the hackable things of the day. You plug them in, you take them out, and you could have a modem or you could have a camera or you could have all sorts of things on them. Now, those form factors, so this guy was sitting down thinking about, okay, I want to make portable computing devices. And he was saying that I'm going to use standard components, and this is a standard component. It's been mass manufactured. All the dies and all the equipment and all the machinery necessary to do that still exists. They're still in large quantities available out there, and they're cheap. So then they've got something like 64 connectors at the back. So he's going to dedicate a certain number of connectors to HDMI, certain number of connectors to USB, certain number of connectors to GPIO, etc., 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 and certain number to power. You with me so far, Dave?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those connectors are, by definition, within the standard. So he's saying this is the standard for a computing device, for making a small computer. So you have a laptop case or a computer or a digital camera, and your PCI MCIA formatted device is your computing device. So you can slip it into a mobile phone, and your mobile phone now is your computing device. You can put it into the back of a TV, and your TV is now your computing device. You take it out, you put it into your laptop case, and your laptop's your computing device. So essentially, you walk around with this thing, and if you get a newer one for your laptop, you can take the older one and put it into your camera, and you know, you can do a daisy chain down. They're all going to be backward compatible. So as a newer version of the USB becomes available, it needs to be backward compatible right down to USB 2. Same with HDMI 1.4, 1.3, the whole way back down. So the device will always fail, even if you're running a newer version of this device on older software. It is required to fail gracefully back. They're not sharing any of the I/O pins so that there's no confusion with the hardware that in this implementation it's this, it's in that implementation it's that. It's clearly defined in the specification so that there's no disambiguity. Sounds like a absolutely awesome device, because I was, as I said to him during the interview, which died, you could get an aluminium laptop case designed for yourself, you know, exactly how you want it. Spend $4,000 on that and know that you never ever need to update it again, because you can, to update your computer, you just update the, slip out that standard device, slip it back in. Maybe you'd want to change the screen, but the size of the screen, the laptop, everything to do with the laptop could be custom designed for you and hackable and updatable. Pretty awesome device.
That does sound impressive. Yeah, it's a great idea. It's similar to, that idea's been kicked around in science fiction, and
yeah, exactly.
But it's coming to reality.
This is, I think, what they actually need is a good marketing team to give the essence of what they're trying to do first, without the technical stuff. It was grand for the Linux Link Tech Show. I mean, the audience here and there are more than capable of understanding what he's on about. But you know, they need one of these, you know, green eco things with lots of flying in butterflies and stuff to sell this concept to the average person, because it's, I think it is a cleaner implementation of the what they were trying to do with the Fairphone and failed due to the fact that the hardware was not open and that the software therefore could not be open, and therefore you bought a device thinking you could upgrade it, but you can't because it's locked down. So yeah, pretty cool thing. And technically the specs made an awful lot of sense. So you know, I was kicking myself that I lost that.
Yeah, I've not heard the TLLTS episode yet. It's the Deadly 666 that's still in my queue, I'm afraid. But yes. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that then.
The audio is terrible quality audio. So if you can struggle through it, I need to have another word. Oh, we had a lot of updates on the contributors map of the world. So we found out what that was. So that was an idea by, let me see, who was it? Started it off?
I think it was Clinton Roy's idea.
That's right, yeah.
Yes.
Brilliant idea. And we put, if you go to mapm.net, which I hope is there, mapm.net, you will, mapm.net, you will get three people on the website. So quite simple thing. And then you click on the link and you get to the correspondent and their shows. So pretty cool. I think we can do that. And I want to know if people can reply going, that's something that you want to put in, or should I just put that as two fields onto the host page when you're uploading a show? What do you think, Dave?
Well, I think it's a nice idea, personally. Well, as you know, I've contributed my details, so I'm more than happy to be part of that. And I think it would be a really good thing. It was interesting to see where Clinton Roy is based, for example.
Yeah. Pretty cool. I didn't even know he was over in that part of the old world. And you're up in the sticks of Edinburgh, Dave.
Far, far away in the north. Yes. All the best, Rome.
I think Kevy would win that particular.
I think so, yes. Yeah.
So did we have anything else that month? Let me see. HPR Map of the World. Yep.
There was a bit of chit-chat about the community news coming up recording yesterday that didn't happen.
Yeah, that's
all really.
That's life, basically. All right. Anything else that you want to share with us? Still got a hangover?
I did pretty well, actually. Yeah. It was fun. It's a good thing to meet up with the guys, and there were seven of us this time at one point anyway. So as opposed to four last year. So
very good.
Some of the people who seemed to be prepared to come never did for various reasons.
So there's
you know, people like saying, "Oh, I live in a different country. How the hell am I going to get there?"
Exactly.
It's
just
incredible.
Let me just waste the price of a laptop for an evening's drink.
Entirely reasonable to me.
It does, yeah.
Given that I got there for free because I got a bus card.
I'm so old. It's you that's been scraping off this economy. That's why we've got the recession.
I know. All my fault. And I drank your beer too, so there you go.
Yeah, good man. All right, Dave. Let's call it a wrap and tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public
Radio.
Join us now and share the software. You'll be free. Okay.
That's the death metal version. Thank you very much, yes.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.